Hey, everybody. I'm Daniel Plainview.
And I'm Frank T.J. Mackey.
It's so weird hearing you say that of all people.
Let's tidy up this tangle of film by putting it on a reel. Here is a motion picture film. 1,000 feet. 16,000 separate photographs.
Welcome, everybody.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the show. Welcome to the Real Debaters podcast. It's been a minute since you've been here, dude.
I know. It's
summer got in the way.
It got in the way, but it went by so fast. So,
it did.
But now we're into the fall, out of the blockbusters, into the fall Halloween, all of these
we're
movies.
Award season, baby.
Which is great.
Right? So the new shows come out.
Yep.
All the reasons to stay in the house for the next 4 months if you're from Manitoba. Well, 3.5, depending on when it starts.
6 months.
Okay,
even
sure.
Seven.
Yeah, definitely. Either way, it is fall. It's another episode here on the Real Debaters podcast. Tony is back. It's been too long. And what are we talking about today? Well, this we've done these before. We did a dedication to Adam Sandler. We did a celebration episode for Martin Scorsese. And now that One Battle After Another is coming out, the newest installment from PTA, Mr. Paul Thomas Anderson, we're doing a Paul Thomas Anderson celebration on the show today.
Woo-hoo.
We're going to ask some questions. We're going to talk about auteur filmmaking. We're going to look at the themes of some of his stuff, what me and Tony like, what we first watched, how we were exposed to that.
Let's
man. We do have some announcements. We're planning some things. As you maybe heard on the last episode, trivia is now starting. It's more of a fall-winter activity. It's going to be bi-monthly to make you motherfuckers really enjoy it, miss it, right? Not every 30 days, every 60 now. So we've got a Halloween one coming. We're planning it right now. It's going to be back at Little Brown Jug. We've got a date. We just want to make sure before we post and then have to change all the media, which we've done in the past behind the scenes. So that is coming. We got a Christmas trivia coming. We're going to be at Comic-Con nice. Again this year. We got stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like now that everybody, like we've mentioned, everybody's kind of going back inside and being more hermity, we're going to give you the reason to come out and have a lot of fun. And if you did trivia with us last semester, last year, we did four rounds of trivia, and then we introduced the kind of the end of the year. We introduced coloring. We have a coloring contest. And then we also introduced a costume or a cosplay contest. And we've done it. We had an office one. We had an It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia one. Lots of people show up and give a shit about this stuff. It's a lot of fun. So we're gonna increase it. We're going to make it better. We're going to do five rounds of trivia now.
Five
rounds of trivia.
Okay.
We can usually crush this in about like an hour. You've been to them. You know,
yeah,
an hour and a half, hour 45. So it's very easy to throw like a lightning round in or another themed round.
Okay.
And everybody's doing four, so we're going to do five because we're way more fun, right?
There you go.
So that fifth round will usually, if not more often than not, be inspired or sponsored by the venue.
Oh, nice.
So we're going to let Little Brown Jug come up with some questions.
Do you have parameters for them, or is it just horror?
It's right now it's just horror.
Okay.
And I mean, Jimmy's gonna come up with a round that's gonna screw everybody.
Of course.
And Charles is gonna go hard in the paint with the minutia, and I'm gonna stick to the tentpole stuff. I'm for the everyman, right? I come up with stuff that's like it's in your brain, but you kinda gotta search for it. Where Jimmy's like, two people know that shit, man. And everybody in the crowd is, none, those two people aren't here. They all got that answer wrong. So that's coming. That's what I wanted to let everybody know. So
nice.
Expect those things. Again, Comic-Con, we're going to be, hopefully they're going to approve us. We'll be at Comic-Con.
Knock on wood.
This, I've told Tony about this.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on what we're allowed for a cast this year, because I've noticed some changes to the submission form, and one of them is 3 to 4 cast members per panel, which is fine.
Yep.
We're big, we're thick, we're chunky, but like we can get down to like 3 or 4.
We can
people.
Thin it down. We can.
Exactly, right? So if you do decide to come to our panel, which you should, because it's always a lot of fun, there's a lot of audience interaction. Tony will, if Tony's allowed to come, Tony will be there for the first time. And what we are doing is Lord of the Streams is the title.
Nice.
One platform to rule them all.
What?
So everybody is experiencing streaming fever, right? We've just got too many streaming services.
Exactly.
Now. And the big switch has happened. They've realized they can monetize streaming with ads, so bye-bye cable.
Yeah.
Right? Out with the old, in with the new. But there's enough streaming services to now have like a wicked 14 streaming platform debate. And have like an A side and a B side and have a winner at the end. So we're going to have two teams. and we're going to go to the audience for their pick on each round.
Nice.
And then by the end of it, it's audience interaction. You cheer. You cheer for the winner. You cheer for the winning team. That's how it works. We'll have prizes. It'll be a lot of fun. When I told you public speaking, it's more like public shit talking.
Basically.
Yeah, being idiots in public.
And no coloring, though.
No coloring at Comic-Con. That's a lot of people to get crayons for. So anyways, that's the shit that's coming. We want to talk about Paul. We want to get into this. Before we get into it, we watched some stuff. We'd like to tell you about that stuff. So I will let you go. It's been a couple months. So Tony, what'd you watch?
So I'm right now really interested in a new television series called The Girlfriend. It's streaming on Prime.
Okay.
Not to give them a plug.
Is it an original or is it just something that Prime...
It seems to be an original creation of Prime.
Okay.
Whether it's I think it's based on a book, which everything seems to be pulling from books these days.
IP.
What's really extraordinary is, one, it's got the incomparable actress Robin Wright, formerly Robin Wright Penn.
Ah, oh, she changed.
Well, I guess she dropped the pen because she's no longer with the pen.
Because the sword is mightier?
Less mightier now that she dropped it. I think she's just one of those phenomenal actresses who've always just kind of flew under the radar, mainly, of course, staying in television work. But she certainly should have had an acting career outside of The Princess Bride. Please do not inundate us with The Princess Bride. But yes, it's one of her...
Inconceivable.
I know. One of her ultimate go-to movies. But what I love about this show is...
What's the plot?
So the plot is a young man brings home a new girlfriend to meet his family, who he has a very close, almost borderline incestual relationship with his mother.
Oh, is this White Lotus?
It's esque without a large monologue so far about what they would do. And
if I was a Chinese prostitute or something.
Exactly.
Like that. Yeah.
But what is very interesting is that each episode tells the viewpoint from the girlfriend and from the mother's point of view.
Oh.
So each one of them has skewed how they read the room through their own eyes, a word was said, how it's interpreted, how it was supposed to be meant.
Tone, structure.
All of it.
Pacing.
And so some persons have more said and some people have less said. Some people were more angry or violent in how it's received and all that. So it's very a unique platform that I haven't seen really done before, because it's at, there's always three sides to everything, your side, my side, and the truth. In this case, the girlfriend, is she crazy? Is she not? Is the mother really overpossessive? Or is she right to really fear about this girlfriend?
Robin, right?
Correct. You're picking up on it. Puns are tooting. So far, just going at a slow pace, not one of those things I want to just binge just yet, because it's a lot to take in, but really great, really good acting.
That's a good hook.
It's really good. I really would recommend this one so far.
Is there, because this is giving me like who's coming home for the Sidney Poitier.
Guess Who's Coming to Dinner?
Guess Who's Coming to Dinner vibes. But that's more racial than it is.
Yeah. Not even near
incestual.
This. I'm not gonna, yeah. This is.
Not good comparison.
Not even. And I'm just, I love you dearly, but not even. One is a poignant speaking
dinner,
about
so.
Race relations. And this one is just like, is your girlfriend crazy?
Okay.
It's just, it's really interesting because even the opening montage, you're hearing a series of voices, you're seeing a series of shadows.
Ah.
And you're trying, and you're, now that you're starting to see how this is formulating, whose point of view is actually correct in that, because it does lead to a murder, maybe not a murder, some kind of thing.
Oh, there's a B plot to it.
Correct.
Okay.
So really recommend it so far. Now, how about yourself? What did you, movie, television, what are you on right now?
I mean, I watched so much at the cabin a couple weeks ago. Like, I still have that like chunk of things to talk about if I wanted to. Something that we just finished, I told Charles this. I said, man, I missed the boat. I'm a loser. Why don't you kill me, baby? I don't know how The Righteous Gemstones got past me for so long.
Okay.
But you know those videos where like someone's like, me watching Yellowstone after one day.
Yeah.
me watching Yellowstone after 5 days. If I did one of these, I'd have a mustache and the biggest sideburns you've ever seen.
Because you're just binging it and can't get off of it.
I can't. My God, that show was so funny.
Yeah.
Like, it is just, it is outrageous. It's ridiculous. It's full of so much goddamn Walton Goggins dick. It's amazing. Like,
you really like the Walter.
I love the Goggins.
Oh, my God.
If I could justify spending $275 on Walton Goggins goggles.
Goggles, yep.
That aren't prescription, like they're just for, you know, I just can't see out of them. I would. I probably would. That's how much I love the Goggins. But where was I?
So you were Righteous Gemstones.
Righteous Gemstones. We just finished that. It's amazing. I just wanted to say that the writing in it is fantastic. Danny McBride is brilliant. The David Gordon Green is one of his friend, his collaborator. They make these like big random like movie style cinematic episodes that are just absurd and like do you know the story? Like, do you know how it plays?
I'm familiar with it. To be honest, I have not been. I'm one of those people like yourself. Oh. I have not gotten on there. I've been heard get on the bandwagon, get on it.
Just let it take you and let yourself be surrounded by three bumbling rich children who are the children of a patriarch of a giant religious church.
Okay.
And it's very like Joel Osteen. It's very like mega church, mega donors, and all the politics that go in behind it and all the conning and all that stuff. So you've got this family who's completely dysfunctional, all of them like griping for power, wanting control, wanting money. You've got the one son who's like the youth leader.
Yep.
Who's in the closet. It's part of his story, right? And it develops over time. You've got the daughter who's an absolute slut idiot who like says the most rude things and has BJ, her husband, who is like just cucked. And then you've got Danny McBride's character who's like the eldest boy who wants to take over the church and do his thing, all while John Goodman's trying to keep it together.
Oh, wow.
And it's post the mother's death. So they're all like, it's just this story of this family, but every episode is stupid. Nothing makes sense. It's just for laughing. Like, and the lines and the absurdity. Like, I've been calling everybody Baby Billy as much as I can because it's how Walt Goggins talks, and it's just part of my lingo now. Like, it got into me. So to everybody who watched it and loved Danny McBride, I was late. I don't know why I didn't watch something so funny. Now I want to watch dumb, funny shit, which leads me to The Paper. That's what I watched this week.
And?
It's so good.
Okay.
It's so good.
For those who have not a background on The Paper, just maybe set it up a little bit.
It's 20 years post The Office. Dunder Mifflin has closed.
Okay.
It has been bought by another conglomerate that deals in three kinds of paper. Yep. Janitorial, tissue, and newspaper.
Sweet Jesus. It actually is a paper.
In the same building.
Okay.
They sell all three of these products. They have a fledging paper, a bustling toilet paper company, and janitorial sanitation paperwork. And this takes place in the newspaper that this company that bought Dunder Mifflin now owns.
Okay.
They're trying to make it big. They can't, like, no one listens to the Toledo Truth Teller is the name of the fucking newspaper. And you're introduced to, like, the ridiculous reporters who are trying to make it. Enter Domhnall Gleeson's character, which is like kind of a Jim, kind of a Michael if you wanted to peg it to The Office. And he's there to bring the paper up to what it once back was in the 70s when it was like a everybody read the truth teller, right? Insert the same dynamic. You have a documentary film team coming in doing single camera shots. Everything is absurd. Everything is funny. Oscar from The Office is there because he was the accountant.
Of course.
So he got purchased with the company and moved with them. So the best part of the first episode, listener, is when they put the camera on Oscar and Oscar's like, no, I've done this. Why are you fucking here? He's like, I'm not letting you use any of this. Shit. Shit bird. Shit. Shit fucker. And he just starts swearing on camera because he knows what's going to happen, right? And it's the same thing. It's the documentary film team interviewing the newspaper, trying to turn the newspaper around.
Nice.
It's everything you expect from Greg Daniels.
Is it based on, like, The Office was based on a British series?
Yeah, it's in.
So is this based on an additional to the British series, or is this an Americanized?
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's based on anything in, you know, across the pond. I do know that Stephen Merchant and Ricky Gervais both got credits in the end. So because it's still in the Scranton universe, and that is a spinoff of a British show, they're still involved. So it's all under the same Corporation LLC, whatever the fuck.
Okay.
But it's if you liked The Office, just take the bits and the setups and apply them to every day now,
sure.
Right? Apply them to 2025. Things you can't say in The Office, people doing weird shit. Like, they've got this one reporter who, like, doesn't do any reporting, but when they need a reporter, he's like, all right, I'll go. So they're like, go down. There's an accident
yep.
at the local, like, corner, right? They're like, go there and interview the people and find out what happened to him. He's like, I'll book the flights, because all he wants to do is just, like, use the paper's money to live life.
Yes.
But he doesn't actually do any fucking reporting. It's that kind of shit, right? So, I mean, if Parks and Rec, King of the Hill, like, anything that Greg Daniels has touched
right.
is always funny.
Nice.
It is a soft reboot. It's a requel, whatever the fuck you want to call it, right? Like, it's got the old, it's got the new. There's nothing new unless it's the story, which, if that's what you're there for, if you're comfortable with the single camera work, watch it, have a good time. It's 22 minutes. It's on Peacock.
Do you watch Abbott Elementary? Are you seeing it in that?
See, I've okay. seen some episodes. It's good. I don't, but it just doesn't
have that same.
The school environment doesn't hit me as much as okay. a newspaper. And I mean, as much as it isn't about kids, it's in a kid environment. And I mean, I don't have kids, so I'm not genuinely attracted to things where there's a kid like story.
Maybe attracted is the wrong word.
Yeah. Okay. Interested in?
Yeah, let's go with that.
Enjoy watching on a television screen?
Yes.
So yeah, I mean, I know it's good. Like, they're all because is Abbott Elementary single cam too?
It is. It's one of those documentary style on the Park and Recs a la The Office kind of thing.
It really, I mean, I just realized the other day that sitcom is short for situational comedy.
Yeah.
Like, it never. And I was like, oh, yeah, because they're all about a situation. Who the fuck knew? Everybody but me. So, I mean, there's only so much room in my life for sitcoms, right? As much as I say that after saying I loved Righteous Gemstones, Righteous Gemstones is long-form HBO show.
Yes.
It doesn't have the sitcom feel. It doesn't
Correct.
Have the live laugh track. It doesn't have the shot in front of a studio audience
Correct.
Feel. So, like, I mean, even The Paper doesn't. But, like, I only have so much bandwidth for public access.
Understand.
Right? The snotty in me is like, no, HBO, FX, give me your independent cinema. Give me
no,
your, you know.
I was a huge fan of The Newsroom.
Yeah.
And I love that so kind good. Of style and way the...
Why is America the best country?
Yeah.
Best opening scene in any HBO
100%.
Show. Like, that just grabbed...
Which is very pertinent today.
Right?
Oh, my God. But we're diverting for a second.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I understand what you're saying. HBO has that kind of formula.
Yeah.
Basically.
It's 30 minutes of something.
But it's different than a situational comedy on TV.
There's no ad break.
Correct.
Right? And if there is an ad break and you're watching Crave or HBO Live, wherever you are in Canada or the America... Their ad break is for their shit.
Correct.
So I'm like, whatever.
And usually their dialogue is a little bit quicker pace. And only I found like the Gilmore Girls were close to that.
Yeah. You know, there comes a time. And I mean, Parks and Rec is one of them, right?
Yes.
And King of the Hill is
Correct.
Not even snappy, but like I can stand that because the new humor with it just really pulls me in. So I can be like, all right, fine. Stupid ad break that takes me out of it. Where like, I don't get sucked out of. Like, it really is what happens when an ad break comes on. It yeah. ruins everything for 3.5 minutes.
It gives you time to go to the bathroom.
But I don't gotta go. Now I'm on my phone, and then I don't want to watch the thing again because now I'm on my phone. And Sean is like, you're on your phone. I'm like, yeah, because there was a fucking commercial break. It's a sick cycle.
So,
anyways.
Righteous Gemstone, The Paper, and now are you anticipating to lead us back in to Mr. Anderson's upcoming movie? Are you going to be one of those first people to go out there, grab it?
I thought we'd go see it together, to tell you the truth.
Oh, nice.
Are you interested in seeing One
yes.
Battle After Another?
Yep.
It's been a while.
It has.
It really, I mean, and this is perfect. Listener, watch what we told you to watch. This is a perfect time to get into this. The last one was Licorice? Was the last one Licorice Pizza?
Licorice Pizza.
Wow.
Yeah.
Streisand.
Yeah.
Streisand. Did you see it?
I did. No, I take it back. It's on my to be watched.
Like on your to be list?
Yeah. Like I got, I think Prime is carrying it right now.
Oh, I thought you meant
yeah.
Tubi the app.
No, no. Like to be watched as opposed to Tubi, T-E-B. So it's one of those. That one, to be honest, it did not. Bring me in this coming
nope.
of age at a theme park kind
no,
of thing, but
no, I it you know what it felt like a expensive version of Adventureland.
Yes, thank you.
Right,
yeah,
and like I mean, he's always been auteur. He's always been independent. He's always had a voice for whatever genre he feels like making, and then makes it his way, which is, I mean, it's expensive, but like it's not flashy.
No.
You know, like it's always in story. It's always in character.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, I heard about this. I don't know when I heard about One Battle After Another, but I heard it was about a book.
Okay.
It's a fiction. It's anti-fascism, political uprising.
Correct.
Two different decades.
Yep.
Of DiCaprio's character when he was in the French 75, which is the anti-fascist group they were in.
Yep.
And these are terms I don't know, listener. So bear with me. And then when he gets older, I think he tries to get back in with them and then insert bumbling, you know,
crazy
political activist, yeah, here, and a crazy story where Sean Penn is the soldier after the guy over the course of 20 years. I think that's the breakdown. Am I wrong?
I think it's around those same lines. There's, you know, close to Nazism kind of thing, and abduction, yeah, all
yeah,
of
yeah.
that. But
yeah. Kidnapping America,
yeah,
all that stuff. And I mean, okay, like the first question I guess I had for us, do you want to come see it with me before?
I do very much.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, we'll start here. Let's bring up the notes. So the question is he one of the last true auteurs in Hollywood, or does his refusal to stick to one genre prove that he is genre proof? You can't peg him against anything. This is an anti-fascist political thriller.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that is a coming of age tale with two kids, one of them who's never acted before. She's a singer. With a random, like, there's nothing really to Licorice Pizza. It's very one note, right? It's like, because he said, yeah, it was about him growing up in the San Bernardino Valley or somewhere in California. Like, it's based kind of on his upcoming.
Like, Paul Anderson is certainly, I mean, he has themes. He has things that,
yes,
that run.
Troubled men.
Right. So, troubled men.
Broken relationships.
Well, someone looking for a relationship, a connection,
yeah,
right? He always needs his characters to find some kind of connection, whether it's to another person, to a cause.
To be oil field.
To be seen, right?
Yeah.
He has a theme of usually a power imbalance, gaining it, holding on to it.
Yeah.
He also has a theme of greed, of someone trying to get ahead.
Boogie Nights.
100%, even in Magnolia, the master. So, and then, of course, his biggest long-running theme for him is, of course, California. He loves setting it always in the California, right?
In the California, yeah.
In the California.
Same with Quentin. I think that's why they get along so much.
Mm-hmm. Because even if you look at the Hidden Thread, is it called The Hidden Thread?
Oh, The Phantom Thread.
The Phantom Thread.
I never saw it. It's the only one I haven't seen.
Very good. Really. But it's,
I don't think I wanted to watch DDL walk away. I didn't want there to be I'm just like, he was just fucking making shoes. Go on. Sorry.
But even there, those same themes are flowing. And it's one of those kind of traditional Hollywood, not epic kind of movies, but kind of great, almost classical kind of style movies.
It's Oscar bait.
But almost, you could say, a lot of his movies. Even Licorice, there, Pizza.
Did get nominated.
Kind of Oscar Baitish-esque, right?
Yeah, I mean, cinematography is always on, mm-hmm, point.
Correct.
Very, for like, boring scenes. They're big.
They're very big. He loves
very
it.
Very grand. He wants you to see how big California is to him.
Correct. And he loves to show, you know, power imbalances and how he moves the camera and stuff like that. So, is he an auteur? Perhaps. Is there others who are in that kind of same vein? You could say that.
Coen brothers.
The Coen brothers, sure.
I would say the yang to the yin, almost.
But I was thinking more of Quentin Tarantino, you know, who has.
Really? I mean, he's more. Okay, go on. Sorry.
But Quentin Tarantino is in the same for me, that kind of large scale, sometimes ensemble, sometimes trying to the redemption of an individual, using actors repetitively a little bit in his movies.
Philip Seymour Hoffman, I mean, The Master, Boogie Nights.
Correct. Those kind of things. But he also has a very distinct kind of style.
Yeah.
When Artur for me is someone like who's making, you know, brutalism, right? That for me is that kind of auteur kind of feather in the wind, it's dark in the night, and I, you.
Allegory, metaphor.
Correct.
So much, like,
correct.
You got to dig for the meaning, right?
Right. Where these are very, you know, movies that you know will get Oscar clickbait on it, but also you know will sell at the same time.
Well, yeah, and there's simple plots. There's never Correct. Anything complicated about
Correct.
You know, in I mean, I guess he's genre proof. I wouldn't say genre-less.
Correct.
Right? So is Spielberg.
Correct.
So was Kubrick.
Correct.
So who else was on? Soderbergh, right?
Yes.
Like, I mean, the examples that I had kind of brought up here, all these guys have made their space movie and made
Yes.
and then gone on and made like their Napoleon.
Correct.
Right? Like Kubrick did. So they but I agree with you. Auteur is the wrong word. I read an interview with him in Esquire that it was DiCaprio interviewing Anderson
Yes.
about this, right? And he's like, you're not, like, I'm going to butcher the quote, but it was, you know, you're not a, you're your own filmmaker. You're a writer. You're a director. Like, what's the word for it?
Yeah.
And his joke was, I'm blockbuster challenged. And I mean, he's not, but they aren't big moneymaker
No.
films, right? They're made for cinephiles.
Correct.
People who like feeling uncomfortable, long
Yes.
silences, patience.
Correct.
Like, you have to wait for Punch Drunk Love to really start working.
Correct.
You know, we all showed up for Let's See What Adam Sandler Can Do.
Yes.
And that TIFF that year, I mean, he just, I've been watching clips of old TIFF.
Yeah.
Just because TIFF just ended. And it's, they're so young. They're such babies. Right? I'm 43. What am I saying? But like, just seeing him having to defend what the choices he made for that movie, and everyone's like, why aren't you fucking dancing for my dollar? And it's like, because there's more to me. And I think that's what makes those movies so great is
Yeah.
he put Mark Wahlberg, you're going to show your dick on camera eventually and make a porn movie. That's a pretty big conversation to have with a young actor who's also got some shit behind him.
Yes. Like, I know where you're going with that.
Right? Like, the history of Mark Wahlberg and like none of these movies taking 20 minutes in the opening sequence of There Will Be Blood and not saying anything, letting moving pictures tell the story.
Yeah.
And everything is told. And then when the voice comes out of nowhere, when you finally hear, ladies and gentlemen, I've traveled a long way tonight to visit with you. And he starts to pitch everybody about why he wants to take their oil. And I'm like, these are artistic choices. They're not auteur choices.
Yeah. Like, I think it's you can definitely see an Anderson film, like, much in the same way as you know a Wes Anderson film.
I was just going to say Wes or Paul.
You know? I left it. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
there
yeah.
is a style. There is
100%.
A, you know a Nolan film, right?
Yeah.
But these are those type of... Now, Nolan can make a blockbuster.
Yes.
Paul Anderson is not really that one who's going to give you that kind of blockbuster. Spielberg is going to give you a blockbuster. It's not going to really happen here, but...
They're talking head movies if you want to get like...
But they are at least movies that you know that if you like a drawn... Not a drawn out, a movie that does not beat you or tell you up front what the plot is.
Yeah.
Where you have to read between the lines.
100%.
Where you actually have to figure things out and be present in the movie where they don't just at the end summarize it for you. A la Saltburn. Great movie, but
what was that? What was that in the tub? We were all asking that Monday morning. What was that in the tub? Is that what I think it was in the tub? That was in the tub. Holy shit. Sorry, go on.
No, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
But great movies,
yeah.
Not these kind of blockbuster kind of movies, and that same kind of enjoyable talking movies. They're not historical drama periods and all that. That's why it was really interesting to see the Phantom Thread, which was almost bridging into that kind of traditional.
Is he there? Can you see him? Like, if you walked into the room and didn't know, because I'm not Roger Ebert here, but like, I can walk into a room and be like, oh, blah, 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 right? Can you tell it's Paul Thomas Anderson?
100%.
Really?
Because of the shots. It's because of how, once again, it's the themes coming through of trying to make a connection, of trying to, how you formulate power, hold on to it, how you get seen and be seen kind of thing. So he has the same kind of, like, same with Spielberg. You know a Spielberg movie because it's about family.
I don't think so. I think he's done so much that there are things, like, I forget that he did Hook. Sometimes.
Correct.
Right?
But once again, it's about family. Steven Spielberg cannot do a movie that does not in some way relate to the family.
Yeah. I mean, the broken family, the family trying to get through something.
Correct.
It is his cornerstone.
Correct.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Okay. No, I question. Next question.
Mm.
Would you say he's more chaotic maximalism or quiet minimalism?
Quiet minimalism. For
me. I agree.
100%. I get,
even the big stuff.
Yeah.
Is still like even the blowing up of the Derrick.
Yes.
His probably one of the most biggest action sequences in any of his movies.
Yeah.
Right. Like Boogie Nights takes place in bars and homes and
correct.
Porn sets. Like
correct.
Very easy to do. The Master big too. Like
yes.
on a boat traveling the world. That's a big one. But then you go back to Licorice Pizza, shooting in the San Bernardino Valley, right?
Yeah.
Or whatever valley it is in California, where they probably made porn in Boogie Nights. Like there's not a lot there, but I agree with you that even that blowing up of that, even like it was quieted by the sun going deaf.
Correct.
Right? So there's no blockbuster in him. I guess he's right. I agree with you.
Yeah, because
The other two comparisons to chaotic maximalism
mm-hmm.
are Magnolia and Boogie Nights,
right?
Which are insane.
But even there, everything relates to the individual, and their biggest moments are where the camera narrows in on the individual and how the camera just focuses on them, right? So you have Tom Cruise's big character, and yes, he's doing the huge infomercial, and he's this grander than life, and he's in front of his audience trying to bring it in. But his biggest point is when he's trying to reconcile with himself with his father. And that camera
yeah.
is focused just sentimentally in on him. I think someone...
That across the bed shot when they cut back to Hoffman standing
correct.
There watching him crying, which Hoffman's crying. He's crying
correct.
Because it's like, I'm the only person who will ever see Tom Cruise cry. This is the best moment ever.
Oh, God. Because you're only allowed this one time
right?
before the overlords take him away to the ship. Which is why we have never seen Wives 2 and 3. No. No, but even, you know, you then go into, as you said, Licorice Pizza. It's really about their...
It's a horny teen.
It's a horny teen intimate connection, yeah. But it's a coming of age. But even this coming of age young man is kind of an older person trapped in a teenage body, right?
Yeah, because he's like he's the kid actor, right?
Correct.
Who kind of like flirts and...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's Cooper Hoffman's first
yes,
role.
Yes.
He's really good for first role. it was creepy watching him be so slick.
Mm.
Like, and I wonder, I'm like, was that you, Paul? Were you like.
Probably a lot of takes to get it where he wanted it to be.
No, I mean, was that Paul as a child? Was he like.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You know,
oh.
Was he hitting on 20 year olds when he was 14? Like,
weren't we all?
I mean, that is the dream.
Living the dream.
Right. Yeah, okay. We've done this before. We've actually talked ensemble casting.
Yeah.
And what it means. And I mean, there's usually 5 to 6 names, but the big ones, Boogie Nights, Magnolia.
Correct.
This probably is going to aggravate a lot of people because I think those are the two movies that really commercially are known.
Correct.
Right. Magnolia being like, oh, it was one of those first movies that had 2 VHS copies when you went to Blockbuster. What is this movie? Why are there 2 movies? This was the Ten Commandments. It was the only thing I knew that was this big. And Titanic. And so, like, that alone was interesting to me. Magnolia is my jam. If I pick between the two,
yeah.
We'll start there. Do you land on ensemble cast being better in Magnolia?
Mm-hmm.
Who really don't do anything together. They're all
correct.
Doing their own thing.
But they are connected.
They're connected.
Correct.
But they don't have a lot of screen time
correct.
Together. But the story is seamless.
Yes.
Versus the ensemble that is Dirk and...
Boogie Nights
and Roller Girl and
yeah.
all of that stuff. Like, which one is your...
To be honest, I love the ensembleness of Magnolia more only because... I thought it was more ingenious of how he has to try to connect each person in some way to the next person. And
yeah.
so you might have Tom
Cruise. Technically, it's...
Right. You might have Tom Cruise's infomercial on the television in the background of someone's scene, and then it's turned off to bridge you to this next character. And so there's a lot of... You have to... There's a smartness there, right?
I need the date with the cop. With John C. Reilly
oh.
and the daughter,
yes,
of the talk show host who molested her as a child,
yes,
to make the date work better with John C. Reilly.
Yes.
They're never in the same scene together, though. I know what you're saying.
Perfect. And so that, for me, there's a smartness there. Is you know, those who like film, those who like to study,
you're asking
it,
a lot of your audience.
You can, it's something, not an egg, but it's something to really captivate you along the lines. Whereas, you're right, Boogie Nights is one of those great ensemble, and for many cases, a lot of actors or actresses who are just really also starting out in their careers. Yeah. Julianne Moore has done a couple of movies, but this is one of those that really kind of launches her. Donnie Wahlberg.
You judge me. Don't you judge me.
Every day.
I don't come in here every day to, I love my husband. That whole monologue is just
fantastic.
Amazing.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of many aspects of, terrible listener, it's gone out of my mind, so I'll just let it go.
Sure,
for,
okay.
For a second. But that's how I like it. How about you? Are you Magnolia or are you Boogie Nights?
I'm Magnolia too.
Yeah.
I am Magnolia for themes. I've brought it up before, the scene, I cry every time when he cries at his father's bed.
Yeah.
I mean, that I wanted that moment, and then I found out my dad died a year after he died. It was like, well, fuck you, motherfucker. That's what I told Charles. He's like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, dude, but you know that scene in Magnolia when Tom Cruise cries by his dad's bed? I really thought I was going to have that. I thought we were going to have that moment, but fucker robbed that of me too, dickhead. Magnolia because... It's the first movie I saw where I was like, all right, I'm just going to make up my own ending. Right? Like, whatever these frogs fucking mean, they mean.
This, I agree with you. The frog being a side part. Like, is it biblical? Is it not? What is this?
Yeah. Like, what is this the giant squid from, you know, that we need to tie everybody together, right?
Yes.
Like, because it starts with these three weird fables.
Yeah.
And then never brings them up again and expects you to figure out, is this all by chance, right? And it really is. Everybody's crossing is by chance. I guess that's the theme, right?
Yeah.
Like, all of these people are only connected by, like, the smallest of strings, but by chance.
Correct.
So, oh, maybe I'm having a moment. Does that mean that all of their things lining up caused the frogs to fall from the sky? Like the butterfly effect of some crazy Southern California story?
This is it. This is that
open. Because there's nothing there for you.
There's your open interpretation, right? Like, you either take it as biblical. It's one of the plagues that's, you know, coming upon Israel kind of moment.
Sure,
here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so it's all.
I never even thought of that. I just thought, you know, and like you hear the fable of like some like the guy who, the scuba guy.
Yes.
Who ends up in the tree.
Yes.
I've heard that.
Yes.
I never heard the one where the guy jumps off the building and then gets shot as he's coming down.
Yep.
I never heard that one, but like you hear a version of that. So it's like a wives' tale or a fable or some shit.
Yeah.
And you want to believe that this happened, but I still don't know how to take away that ending.
Which is great.
If you do, listener, let us know.
That is it. And I'm sure every listener has a different interpretation of what that was supposed to mean.
Yeah.
Or those who've read on every blog or written on every blog.
And I haven't done that. I don't want... It's not... I mean, I could, but I don't want... I don't think I want to... I like that it was so like, what the fuck? Right? Yeah. And like every... It makes no sense. It makes no fucking sense. So Magnolia is where I lie.
Perfect.
And the Frank T.J. Mackey stuff is some of Tom Cruise's best work.
This is, I mean, that has to be its own little conversation. I think of all of Tom Cruise's movies, one, he's not running, so yay.
He's acting.
It's truly some of his most pivotal acting moments there, where you just see that this young man actually had depth of talent that was going up a hill, right?
Well, and I mean the comparisons, like you juxtapose the character who like is hiding all of this inside.
Correct.
With the actor Tom Cruise, who's maybe been hiding all of this inside.
Correct.
Because, you know, he can only run. But it was, we didn't even know he could run at that point, really. But
it was also good. I mean, he's got a he's not the lead. He's one of many in this cast here. So this man who was at his, you know, at the top of his game was willing to be part of an ensemble cast. Yes, it's a name. It's going to draw people in. There's no doubt about that. But I think it's one of his better. It's one that he should have won an award for.
Supporting actor should have nabbed that.
Yeah,
that's a no brainer.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's worked with some of the best.
Correct.
And he likes to do what Tim Burton does, which is, hey, listen, I found my Depp.
Yeah.
Right? Scorsese found De Niro, found DiCaprio. Who's the next D in that list?
Daniel Day-Lewis is...
Right? There's yep. That's it. So I guess my question to you...
Yeah.
Who's been underused more?
Ooh.
Joaquin Phoenix or Julianne Moore? And I didn't mean to rhyme there. Because they've only done one apiece. And both of their performances... I like The Master. I don't think it's a bad movie. I like that it's teasing Scientology and having fun with it and talking about a side of L. Ron Hubbard that no one really ever knew about. But I think... I mean, he did use him in Inherent Vice. So technically speaking, he's done him twice and both were leads. Okay, that's a bad example. Julianne Moore should have been more utilized. Is there anybody else you can think of that maybe should have been?
I mean,
Don Cheadle?
Mr. Hoffman has been used a couple of times. He's and unfortunately...
John C. Reilly, same.
Exactly. So I agree with you. Julianne Moore should have been... had the opportunity, the capability to have much more of a range for him.
Daniel Day-Lewis twice.
The only unfortunate is the type of movies he was making, if you look at them, I don't know where I would have put her in there. Like, Amy Adams was right for The Masters. I don't see Julianne Moore being in that role.
She would have been too persnippy. Like, too... Amy Adams has this sense of,
there's a sweetness at one level.
Yep. And, thank you. Yep.
But then there is
a bitch. The matriarch.
Someone controlling underneath. Whereas Julianne Moore.
She needed the old man.
Correct.
But we're just typecasting now.
Correct.
I know what you're saying. Yeah. Okay, that was a bad question. Okay. Then let's move to Philip Seymour Hoffman, DDL, or Riley. Which one of them has pulled the best performance out of? And five lines on screen. Mm-hmm. As like the best boy as Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yes.
Is that his best performance or is it as the master? Like, I mean, there are moments that are so good in a Paul Thomas Anderson movie that they just deserve to be like the 3 minutes and that's it. Not even a short, just like a scene. Like, scene work is so pivotal to it. So who do you think has worked the scene the best?
I think it has to go to Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Right? We're going to disagree.
Perfect. For me, I think he was perfect in Boogie Nights, in this kind of...
Hi, Dirk. Look at the car I got, Dirk.
But this is it. Like, he was the right person to play a character that was so desperate to be wanted, to be loved, to
lonely.
Be seen, to be a part of this world and always on the outside of it because of looks or...
Well, and you can't even get on the inside of porn. Like, that's a pretty bad situation where, like, you're on the outside of the porn group.
Correct. Right?
The people who are always naked, who are always free and open and drugs and partying and love and life, and you still feel lonely in that group.
Well, also... Let's be honest here. Yes, porn at that time, it's coming of its own. The adult film is...
Pun intended.
You betcha. Had a bit of, you know, legitimacy, but at the end...
Well, it was theater only, right? It hadn't gone to... That's the whole plot of the fucking... That's the B-plot.
But these individuals, these, actors and actresses were becoming known for themselves and were being talked about and were actually believing that in some cases it could launch them into a real career.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you're just taking your clothes off, and there is not everyone relying heavily on their remembering lines or having in-depth dialogue, even though they're trying desperately to make quality porn movies.
Hi, you're here for the part? Well, yes. Yes, I am. Well, I need to see it, so you should take it out. Like, they're not even saying dick.
100%. And there's, you know... You could just go along with it. And here you have Seymour Hoffman's character who, by all, like,
they're not taking anyone or everyone into the film. They're actually having still standards. And you're a standard that porn won't let in. So you could just see this desperation, yeah, loneliness. Yeah. Although in some ways, he doesn't then get, you know, a downturn of all of the vices that come with it by and large.
I think his role in that in Boogie Nights is better than The Master. I mean,
correct.
The Master is him being the master that he is.
Correct.
And adopting a character and building something.
Correct.
Like, acting wise,
there it is. Now that's for me, but what is you, who do you feel?
I think it's DDL.
Really?
I think the biggest Bill the Butcher isn't even as big as a transmedia. I can still see him in there. Lincoln, I can still see him more. Lincoln the most.
Okay.
Because he's still got, like, he's a light voiced man. He doesn't have a deep voice.
Yeah.
So when you hear Lincoln talking in that southern accent, I hear Daniel Day-Lewis. But when he opened his mouth for the first time, I was like, that man is gone. And in place of him is Daniel Plainview.
Sure.
And we will never know how much we owe to Paul Thomas Anderson for writing that and casting him and how much responsibility it goes in that versus what he brought to the role. But I think out of tandem director-actor performance, I agree with you. That's Philip Seymour Hoffman's best performance in all those movies. Even second only to, I would say this is second to Best Boy. And what's his name? Do we remember his name? I don't remember his name right now. Shut up. In Punch Drunk when he's Freddy the Mattress Salesman.
Yes.
That too. Short. Well, no, he's on screen 3/4 of the movie, but it's his power, right? It's everything I expect from Philip Seymour Hoffman. But Daniel Day-Lewis puts on that suit, goes and steals people's oil, and it is, I'm gone.
Sure.
I am gone, and I am so blown away, and I love that there's just these little haunting pieces of an industry that is going to come and kick the world's ass in Dan. Like, everything that is wrong about the oil industry is in that man.
Yeah.
And it really is a movie about how much damage one man can fucking do to an industry. And it's top five movies.
Yeah. And I guess the question comes down to it, listener, is like, Daniel Day-Lewis has a breadth and depth of acting where he can become multiple different characters and immerse himself. So when you've got that talent, that's fantastic. But is that, like, that gives him the range to do different things. But for me, like, in the movie that you're sourcing there, it's over the top.
There Will Be Blood's over the top? Yep. You think it's over? Really?
It's over the top. It's almost like, Gangs of New York kind of over the top.
See, I think that's over the top. I think Bill the Butcher is so big and so, like, you could have dialed that back a bit from, like, the random night stabbing of meat. Like, some of those things just didn't work. But, I mean, still great performance. But I don't know. Maybe it's the gentlemanly thing. Maybe it's, I don't know. I just, that is just one monumentous performance.
Yeah. Whereas I thought with Philip, right, you have this, you know, yes, his characters are very similar, right? Outside of Capote, where he actually, the voice and all that.
Yeah.
But he's basing it on
I wrote about this.
Where it's based on a real life person. So he has something to base that on, kind of thing.
Shot in Winnipeg, if you didn't know. Catherine Keener.
Oh, so good. But having those kind of smaller characters that have got a moment on screen where he just envelops the whole screen and brings you in, and you could just see the different types of emotions. It's just, I think, it's a harder kind of acting because you've got to chew the scene with your 2 minutes. Whereas Daniel, it's easy to be...
You can pull that yarn.
Yeah. And you know, it's easier when you're this over-the-top, grandiose kind of character kind of thing. The smaller, subtler ones, I find, are much harder.
Yeah. Agree to disagree.
I know. I am right and you are wrong.
I mean, Cooper Hoffman owes a lot to him. Alana Haim owns a lot to him.
Yeah.
My question, though, is that was Adam... Like, do we think Adam Sandler got another, like, notch in his bat belt because he did Punch Drunk Love?
In what way?
That was that like a John Travolta Pulp Fiction thing, do you think? Where like you have a name.
Yeah.
He's that name.
Yeah.
Things have kind of dwindled. Happy Madison, this is way before all this.
Yeah.
Right? So Adam Sandler,
shabba-da-doo,
in this comedy
yeah.
that has a lot of funny parts if you're a dark individual and you
correct.
Like awkward moments. And,
correct.
You know, families tearing each other apart and breaking glass windows with hammers. Like, there's so, the again, like the frogs, I don't understand the fucking organ.
We will never know.
But the pudding, and to do that, it's like an inanimate thing, right? And an inanimate thing made like someone so happy, right? He yeah. got to travel everywhere with her because he got free pudding points, right? It's pudding. Right. Doesn't mean anything. But it's not about the pudding. It's about collecting the points because he's in love with her and he's trying to form a relationship and his sisters have been beating on him his entire life and, you know, he just got screwed out of a giant credit card payment for phone sex that he didn't really think was going to be, you know, like there's so many things that are happening to him
yeah.
that this pudding becomes this like MacGuffin, right? It's driving him. This inanimate thing has so much cool shit attached. I'm digging too deep into it.
I think you are reading a lot into this pudding, but okay.
But I'm an auteur.
But to your point, was this an Adam Sandler moment to take his career to that next level? Like John Travolta kind of...
Yeah, answer my first question.
It should have been. But then Adam Sandler... But look, on one hand, Adam Sandler was known as the greatest actor who, for price point for... a studio.
Yeah,
he was the cheapest, but brought in the most money. And so these small, quote unquote, comedies, these screwball comedies, made tons of money for the ratio of what it cost.
Yeah. Cost to benefit. Yeah, cost benefit analysis.
Were they great movies? No.
Yes, they were.
Were they really the one where he played his own twin sister? No. what was it? Blended Family? No. These were not great movies. And I think that the dilemma is that, you know, I don't know if Adam Sandler wanted to then launch into more serious films, whether or not Hollywood didn't want him to or not. It just didn't happen for him. I think he got happy being in that kind of small sandbox kind of weird comedy movie, hoping he would find... that next hit. Ben Stiller is better, I think, at getting those kind of funny movies that are actually going to deliver a lot better
yeah.
than an Adam Sandler, because most people are just like...
Well, one was on SNL for doing zany Fresh and Pepper bits.
Correct.
And the other one was a Nepo Baby who knew how to parlay it, essentially.
Correct.
Right? Yeah, okay, I can see what you're saying. We were talking about this earlier, and I think it's kind of cool just to bring up for a second. Do you think his movies have can they survive this TikTok world we live in now? Because
oh, yeah.
we talked about The Patience.
Yeah.
And like the long, like the 20-minute intro on There Will Be Blood, or just the musical pan shots that he did in Boogie Nights, where like a lot is happening, but not a lot is being said, right? Like
yeah.
for a young mind who is, you know, you have 3.5 seconds.
Sure.
To grab, does filmmaking, specifically Paul Thomas Anderson style films, do they have a life? Or is that the reason he decided to do a shoot 'em up? Like Warner Brothers or whoever made this is like, you gotta make a banger, man. Like, this can't be.
I know where you're. Is there potentially a truth in that? Sure. I think he's making this movie right now because he constantly changes it up a little bit, right? So your Licorice Pizza and your Phantom Thread are two different kind of movies. They have
slow and slower.
They're slow and, well, you know, one is more of that artistic kind of, like I said, classical style film. One is more of these coming of age youth movies.
Genre.
Yeah. This one, I think, is on more along the lines of what we saw with Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio, where
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood,
right? I think it's in that kind of
yeah.
kind of
yeah.
vein, right? Yeah. And so I think it's just following maybe he's following a bit of a crumb here, but I think it's just one of those like, I'm going to try this and we'll see where it goes. Now, whether or not TikTok prevents us from having these kind of you've got to think for yourself kind of movies, no, because I think at the end of the day, Paul Anderson is a Hollywood favorite.
He makes movies in some ways for Hollywood. He makes it for
the
Academy.
Kind of movie that keeps the industry alive.
Correct.
Right? Like, you've got to feed it to
correct.
Nurture it.
You're going to see a Wes Anderson movie for some time, whether you like them or not. You're still going to see these kind of movies. You're going to see this.
If we stop making it, we don't make it anymore.
Like, I don't think Paul Anderson is going to become a Steven Spielberg.
No.
Where he has to balance blockbuster against thinking movie.
Well, Paul Thomas Anderson, from my understanding, isn't producing movies when he's not directing movies.
Correct.
Right? So Spielberg is jumping from, I'll sit in an office and be like, you need to fix this because this isn't going to work because I know how to make a
correct.
Movie. To, I'm directing this. This is my vision. I'm on set for 12 to 14
correct.
A day. So that's not Paul Thomas Anderson's.
No.
He's probably traveling the world or making art. Like,
yeah.
He doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who took a vow of silence for a year or some shit, right? Like,
no.
He's an artist more than he's a filmmaker.
Correct.
But there's more artist in him than I would say there's artist in Spielberg. I would say there's filmmaking power.
I think that's a podcast for the future.
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, we can debate the GOAT all we want, but I've never been like, that man is an artist. That man has made some art. But Steven Spielberg isn't an artist. He's a rich filmmaker who is a powerhouse. Like, he's Paul Thomas Anderson doesn't have Amblin Entertainment. Paul Thomas Anderson doesn't have the deals and the dinners that
correct.
Steven Spielberg is going to, right? So he's not a Disney friend.
But he doesn't want to make those movies.
Exactly. So that there is your difference.
Correct.
That's my point.
Yeah, I think as long as you have Soderbergh making his kind of movies, these are the type of, crew. And if you look at the last five pictures that have won at the Oscars, they've not been blockbusters. They have been these kind of smaller pictures.
Well, that's the problem, is that it's almost like when, as soon as you step into, we're making a blockbuster now, then you lose whatever intimacy or moment whatever zhuzh you had when it was 70, you lose at 150 because now you got more people.
Yeah.
Now it's not just you and a cinematographer, right? Like, it's you've got crews, you've got budgets, you've got times. Like, I'm not saying that that's not happening, but from my limited perspective, I'm sure he has more time to get what he wants when he makes his movies than when Marvel's making their movies.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Marvel would be the worst benchmark for those kinds.
Sure,
right?
That's just the blockbuster template, right?
Correct.
So the there's the huge gap.
Correct.
Between that, so when you say they're still making these movies, it's so that other. You'll make another battle.
Correct.
So you can make something else.
Sure.
Because that got it produces. It's an ecosystem.
Yeah. I don't think the TikTok kind of culture of quick attention span is going to necessarily remove these kind of movies per se, as long as Hollywood is still kind of that benchmark for what. Based on the movies they're selecting, and and even smaller, like if you look at independent kind of horror movies, right? They aren't these kind of like overly flashy kind of things. Even they are smaller. Like if you're looking at
horror, you got to get it in camera.
Yeah, but you got Weapons, you've got Megan. These are still smaller, intimate kind of movies. So there is still those. As long as you kind of those kind of movies are out there, and you have these kind of directors that are still playing in these waters. I mean, if we can still get Brutalist.
Yeah, well, 100%. Bradley Colbert, I think that was his name.
Yeah.
I still haven't seen it. I mean, 3 hours is a lot to ask.
Sure.
Of a movie that I tried to see multiple times before it got before award night.
Yeah.
Didn't see it. I mean,
you had Oppenheimer just a couple of years ago, which is this long historical period piece that is.
But that was action-packed for it being a talking head movie.
But sure, because you have an atomic bomb going off, right? But
you have the weight for an atomic bomb.
And yeah, sure. Did it bring in more people because they partnered it with the greatest campaign of linking it to Barbie? So both male and female, husbands, wives, partners, all going out.
You went to Barbie, dear. We're going to Oppenheimer.
Exactly.
Listen,
right?
I went to Oppenheimer, honey. You're going to fucking Barbie.
And great campaign, right? Two movies on two different parts of the spectrum with, great cast. Why link those together at that time? But it was a great marketing campaign.
It almost begs the question, why haven't
others done? I think this will never be repeated again.
It's lightning in a bottle.
Correct.
I don't know. You think he'll ever touch streaming? You think he'll ever pull a Fincher? I mean, if you're given what you want as an artist, if you're given the colors and the budget.
Never say never. David Lynch, this great artistic filmmaker, did TV.
He did the best TV, though.
But this is it. He did TV, right?
One time.
But he did it. He.
I don't think that's even TV. Have you seen it all? Have you seen all of Twin Peaks?
All of it, plus all the movies.
And the new one?
Correct.
Okay.
So I delved into the mind that is Lynch.
It's not even TV. It's just absurdity.
Correct. But
it's so good, but it's absurd.
But this is it, listener. Never say never, because TV, whether it's on streaming, particularly, you know, whether you want the immediate binge watching or drawn all out, there's an audience there. And in some cases, there's a budget there. Netflix is producing.
They're giving more for their artists.
So I think, you know, Apple is producing some great.
Apple produced a fuck ton of Emmys on Sunday night.
Correct. The problem you're also now starting to see is the amalgamation or the conglomeration of television and movies combined, right? So your Disney has its own streaming. So if I'm Disney and I buy your movie, they may stream it for you. You may not have that option, right?
That's what I'm saying.
Universal.
Well, you make those deals.
Correct.
So yeah.
Or they'll just say, I want the movie and I'll be the distributor for it, right? So Netflix.
Taylor Swift. I'll distribute my own shit, bitch.
Correct. So it's hard to say. Like if he does a thing with Universal and Universal's like, I'm going to get more of a streaming audience from this and this, let's go there. I don't know if he's going to be the type of person who's going to go, take my movie back.
Because he's writer-director.
Correct.
So it's different for him.
Correct.
Because he says, buy my script. So then I buy it because I'm a writer. And then he puts his director hat on. He's like, you know, pay me to direct it because I'm not the writer. And then I want to be the producer because I want the producer money.
Yep.
So now I've got complete control of my movie. That's the kind of deal you say to Netflix when you want to go over, right?
Correct.
Instead of like, you're just paying me to direct someone else's movie.
Correct.
You're now asking me, that's expensive.
Yeah.
Because Scorsese doesn't write his own fucking movies.
No. God, no.
Oh, well, he has, but like he doesn't anymore. Because Goodfellas he wrote, I think he wrote 3.
Okay.
But, okay. So you think there's... Point of all this is you think you think he might go streaming?
I think one time, I think none of them would ever rule it out. I think maybe sometimes he might feel that there's a story he wants to tell that is on a small scale and only the television screen will be the most intimate way to tell that story, right?
They're courting Nick Cage for True Detective season 5 right now. Might be the first time that like he pulls a McConaughey on the same series that McConaughey went TV.
This is just it. Like you
think things are crazy.
And with Nicolas Cage,
you never
know. I will work for food. I'm literally that man now is in everything.
Yeah.
So but good on him. He's still acting.
So we're gonna close out. We got one more segment. It's the donut test.
What is the donut test?
I was at work today, we had donuts.
Okay.
Sometimes we get like 4 or 5 different versions of donuts. Like that's a lottery day. So, like, sales reps will come by and be like, Tim Hortons, and then, you know, Robbins, and then fucking O'Donuts, and then Krispy Kreme, and you're just like, this is insane. And, like, right now I'm on medication that I'm not hungry, so, like, I don't eat any of this shit. I just watch it get eaten. It's really fun. But I was thinking about donuts today, so I was like, okay, let's go through. I've come up with, you've seen these, but it'll be a yay or nay, because listener doesn't know what you think of these yet. But I've come up with a list of what I think each of a select movie would be if it was a donut, and why it would be a donut. So I'm going to read to you, and you are going to give me your honest opinion.
Okay. Let's see if you got it right.
So There Will Be Blood was one I picked. I feel that There Will Be Blood would be a powdered donut. It's got a refined look to it, but it leaves a mess you can't escape.
Do you think it has some kind of gooey center?
It's the oil.
Okay.
Right? Like at the center of the donut is the oil in the movie.
Yep.
But like no matter what happens to Daniel, like it's on your fingers. Like his son goes deaf. He ends up being a drunk. He commits murder in the end. Like no matter what happens, he gets baptized. He didn't even want to be baptized. Right? I repent. I repent in the name. I drink our milkshake. You know, so I feel, so do you agree? Would powdered donut, not a powdered donut? This is so dumb.
I love the fact that you told our listener that because the powder gets on everything,
yeah.
that gets on it. That is more the connection.
That's okay.
Yeah. All light, right. flaky, no.
No, no, it's not a light movie at all.
Not at all.
It's about murder and greed. So then Magnolia.
Yes.
I felt was a mixed bag of, like a mixed box of donuts.
Okay.
So dumped in your lap, very chaotic, overwhelming, and too much sugar all at once. Like, this is a lot happening.
So, like a Krispy Kreme.
Like a, yeah, yeah. Well, like a box. Well, not like a box of mixed sugary donuts.
Yes.
So like a chocolate, a double chocolate.
Yes.
Right? Not just a chocolate glaze.
Yes.
And then like a cruller.
Yes.
And a Krispy Kreme, right? Like all of those like sugary things.
Yes.
It's just very, it's
high
a lot.
Fructose.
High fructose is what I'm saying. Chaotic and overwhelming. Yay, nay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like where you're going with that.
Okay. And I mean, multiple people, 12 donuts. 8 donuts, 4 donuts, you know, 1 donut, like this guy right here playing the stupid game. Punch Drunk Love was a sprinkled donut, colorful on the outside, hiding a dark, anxious dough underneath.
Interesting. I thought that was more Boogie Nights.
Sure. Yeah. 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 Everybody's right. She's just missing her kid. He's missing mom.
It's just all fantasy. It's all kind of.
It's very Uncut Gems.
Yeah.
Like,
very
much just anxious from start to finish. Okay, cool. Awesome. I'm going to skip Inherent Vice.
Yes.
Because that was just a complete guess. But okay, have you seen Inherent Vice?
No.
Okay, so this doesn't matter. You can't tell me if I'm right. Licorice Pizza.
Yes.
Is the weird jelly-filled flavor.
Yes.
Nobody asked for.
Correct.
Right? Like, it's just kind of there. But someone somehow becomes your favorite.
Oh.
Like, over time, if you watch it enough.
Okay.
Because it's got coming of age, youth. There's pranks in it.
Yes.
It's summertime.
Yes.
It's California. I mean, eventually, I think over time, Licorice Pizza would grow on me.
Correct.
But with the, like, I mean, you just don't come into it happy with the title Licorice Pizza. I mean, it's a great name for a pizza joint, but like, I mean.
It always confused me when I heard, I thought it was Mystic Pizza.
Yeah. Or Ping Pong Pizza. That's a different podcast.
Yes.
So I agree with you on that one. That's my four donuts.
No, and so then the master, would it be just a plain dry donut? It's
it would be it would be 12 of the same
plain dry donuts. Yeah, I agree with you on that one. This
would
one
be nothing special.
No, but this one you have to dunk into something, absorb it,
yeah,
and sit with it for a while. But it's a donut.
It's yeah, it's a donut of
dryness.
Every time you eat one, you have to tell someone about a dark secret.
Correct.
And they keep it for eternity.
I agree with you on that
and
one.
And make you sign a 1,000-year commitment to the Sea Org. Are we talking about Scientology?
I think we are, actually, my friend.
What else are we missing? What else could be a donut?
There's many donuts.
Besides us.
I think we're cruelers, you and I.
You're crueler.
Oh, very much so. But one everyone loves.
Listener, if you like this game, please let us know. And if you didn't, please let us know. And we won't turn movies and scenes into donuts anymore. Thank you so much for tuning into another episode. We hope you liked our Paul Thomas Anderson celebration. But if we missed something, if you thought we were idiots, if you want to fact check us, if you want to leave an idea for trivia for a show episode, you can do that. There's a link for voicemail in our show notes. Every podcast has one. I'm sure you've done this on other podcasts. Do this on this one. Don't use your real fucking name. You don't have to. You can be You can be Steven Spielberg.
Oh.
You can be like Paul Thomas Anderson here. Just telling you how I feel. So we'd love to hear from you. We'd love it if you interacted with us. And if there's a place to leave a comment or a review, 5-star reviews help small podcasts that record in basements of houses become bigger podcasts who buy studios who then take over the world. You could help us be that podcast. If you laughed, if you had fun, if you were yelling at me or Tony at all through all of this, you should come back again.
Please do.
Please do.
Please do.
I got nothing else. I've been Licorice Pizza.
Oh, I'm the master.
Yes, you are. Watch all the movies, kids. And yeah, it's just one battle after another. Say bye, Tony.
See you later, my friend.
I'd say that was a pretty successful broadcast.